Welcome to Seth Gardman on Podcast, from startup to stock exchange.
Good afternoon and welcome to the podcast, Startup to Stock Exchange. And today, I'm going to give you a different perspective on things. And sometimes, you know, I'll listen to a podcast, not necessarily for the topic, although the topic today is an extremely important one. This is really going to focus on the perspective. And so today's guest is, his name is Jeb Besser. And Jeb is the CEO of a publicly traded NASDAQ company called Modular Medical. Ticker symbol, if you want to jot it down, is M-O-D-D. And what I liked about Jeb, and I'm going to talk about him in front of him just for a second, two things. We met at a conference. The first thing that I was very taken aback by him was his passion. He's an extremely well-spoken CEO. And very often when you meet the CEO, even of a public company, it's a little bit dry. It's very much about Excel sheets and numbers. And he was just overflowing with passion about his mission, his company, their product. But the second thing that I was very impressed about was his perspective. And I mean the following. You know, very often the CEOs that we interview on this podcast or in general that we come to meet in the capital markets world are CEOs who had this crazy idea out of their basement and they tried to execute something or they started something from scratch. But this is not the case with Jeb. He's coming from the other side. He's coming from the investment side of things. And now he's on the issuer side. And so the way that he looks at the markets, running a company, the investment community is very, very different than your average Joe CEO. So with that long introduction, Jeb, thank you for being here. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Seth.
I appreciate the time in advance. So why don't we just jump right into it? At a high level, tell us a little bit about the company, about Modular Medical, and then we'll get into background and how you got there and things like that.
Okay, sure. So Modular Medical is a small NASDAQ listed company that's working on getting cleared and commercializing a next generation pump for insulin delivery in the diabetes space. The company was started by Paul DiPerna, who was the founder's first CEO and first employee of Tandem Diabetes, which got the Tandem T-Slim cleared in 2010, 2011. And believe it or not, that was the last major commercially successful diabetes or insulin delivery platform cleared in the diabetes space. And that was a long time ago.
Over a decade ago.
Yep. And so then he left Tandem. He went off. He did something else. And then, but he always wanted to return to diabetes because he felt that he had left a whole bunch of patients behind with the way the T-Slim was designed. And he wanted to right that wrong. And so the history of the company is that, I work at Manchester Management. I'm one of the two PMs there. And we were doing due diligence on another company in the diabetes space. And we met Paul. And the idea we were working on totally flamed out. We used him as a subject matter expert. And he was very clear, this is never going to work. And we agreed with him. And we said, but this idea you told us about that you've spent $2 million of your own money on in your basement, that's interesting. And we want to invest. So we put Paul's private entity into a public shell and said, you know, we're just going to pretend this isn't even public for a few years. We're going to get current in our filings. And then, when the time is right, we'll uplist to the NASDAQ and we'll take a run at it. And okay. So that's the history of the company. And our reason to be is to try and address this huge unmet need in diabetes. The 1 second stump speech on that is, even though insulin pumps have been around since 1996, 8 out of 10 people that would benefit from wearing an insulin pump because they use daily insulin aren't on a pump. I mean, that is just a shocking amount of underperformance in terms of penetration of this user group that would benefit tremendously. And by the way, save the healthcare system a ton of money.
Right.
And the numbers are the numbers are staggering. Basically 32% of type ones, and all type ones require daily insulin, obviously, were on a pump in 2006. And today that number is about 38 or 39%. In 2006, it was like basically 0% of type twos. Now it's about 10, but that still means 9 out of 10 type twos who would benefit aren't wearing a pump. And most unfortunate of all, The people who have adopted technology were the people that probably were already getting the best care to begin with, because they've been, they're so well organized, they're well educated, they're motivated, they're well insured. And so in 2006, 21% of type 1s were making their ADA target in terms of blood sugar range. Today, it's the same number. We've taken the people who were getting the best care, who were the best motivated, and we've given them even better care. And I totally applaud them for doing the work and putting in the effort. That's not everyone. 8 out of 10, the reason 8 out of 10 people haven't adopted is they haven't found a product yet that's going to work for them. And look, it's a disease of everyone. It's all range of socioeconomic spectrum, education, motivation, et cetera. And what's currently offered to them right now is basically, you've got, if you like coffee, the best analogy would be a $2,000 latte machine is what's on, it's what's on tap. And you can have three different varieties of this style of levers and knobs, and you're going to get a great cup of coffee. But at the end of the day, most people have a Keurig in their kitchen
Right.
because it's that easy to use. And when you go into a hotel room, that's what you find because anyone can figure out in 5 minutes. That does not exist in pumps today. And we think that it should.
So you're the
That's really,
Keurig of the
that
pump
is,
industry.
that's the driving force of the company. There's really nothing else to it. It's how can we bring better care and an appropriate amount of work to what we call the rest of us.
So let me ask you this, Jeff, for those that are listening. And I wish there was a way because when you showed it to me, from a visual standpoint, it's very, very apparent. Try to describe for us the experience, I guess, for people that are using some of the other products that are out there available for them versus what you're offering right now from a, just that day-to-day experience standpoint.
Well, Seth, let's just clarify one thing. We aren't offering anything right now because we are not cleared by
Right.
the
Okay. Well, I
FDA.
want to talk to you about that, but let's circle
Yeah.
back to that
So
afterwards. Okay.
we have submitted to the FDA for clearance, but we have not been cleared. We are in the clearance process, and we can talk in more detail about that when
Right.
appropriate.
Okay.
But the current three products, which were introduced in 1996, 2009, and 2011, respectively, the Medtronic Mini Med, the Insulin Omnipod, and the Tandem t:slim are beautifully engineered engineering solutions to a technical problem rather than products that were actually designed from the ground up to be terribly appropriate for consumers. And so when you just say to your endocrinologist, listen, I've decided my, my peers have convinced me I should go on an insulin pump. What have you got for me? They make you do a diary for 60 days of all your diabetic events, how many carbs you had each day, how many units of insulin you had, what your blood sugar readings were. And they're not doing that because you're a good or a bad candidate clinically. If you need daily insulin, you are a good candidate clinically. It's a pure proxy for compliance because the current products are so feature rich and burdensome to learn that they're worried they're going to buy you a fourth that insurance will buy you a $4,000 paperweight. At the end of the 60 days, you say, here's my diary. And they say, congratulations, you're eligible for a pump. And you call, here are the business cards for two or three of the big three. Call the reps and they come to your house and they literally do a feature and benefit sale at your kitchen table as to why you should pick their pump. And then you go back and you talk to your nurse diabetes educator or your certified pump trainer about which one is right for you. And then you take a week-long training class to learn how to use these things.
A week.
And for that trouble, in the case of Tandem and Medtronic, you also pay on average $800 to $1,000 copay out of pocket for the privilege of spending 30 to 60 minutes a day managing your pump. And that's a lot. And that's a lot of burden. That's a lot of burden for you to feel like you're going to get better outcomes in 15 years, which is why pump fatigue sets in pretty rapidly for a lot of people. And let's talk about why you need a week-long training class, because each one of these devices has more than 1,000 configurations. The Medtronic Mini Med alone has more than 1,300 configurations. And if you configure your pump wrong, you die, or you can severely injure yourself. So this is not a low consequence. Oh, I've ignored the check engine light on my car for the last 6 months and nothing has happened kind of
How
situation.
do you know? Yeah. Okay.
This is you are putting yourself at real risk if you don't pay attention. And so that's a lot of complexity. It's a lot of complexity to take on. We think the current pumps are very complex. They're expensive because they're old style engineering, so custom solutions from with technologies of yesteryear that don't take advantage of modern manufacturing and a possible other way of doing things in terms of delivering insulin safely. But they're also, tough form factors. Like the Medtronic MiniMed is the size of like a Microsoft Zune. It sits on your belt, if you remember that product. It sits on your belt or in your pocket. It has an interface that looks like a Microsoft Zune interface, actually. It takes AA batteries. It has a 42-step process every 3 days to change the cartridge. And it has 48 inches of tubing that comes out of the top of it that goes into your abdomen. That can catch if it catches on a doorknob or something and gets kinked, you can be in serious trouble. So that's not a wonderful form factor. The Tandem t:slim offers you the same 48 inches of tubing. It offers to sit on your belt and in the pocket as well. It does have a touchscreen, color touchscreen. So that does
Okay.
make it a little easier to navigate those 1300 user configurable features. But that touchscreen is made of glass and not Gorilla Glass, so it breaks all the time.
Wow.
And so that's, and it's still 1300 features. And the Insulet Omnipod requires you to carry a second cell phone around to manage their device, which is a much smaller patch or a little egg that sits on your arm or on your abdomen. And look, that is undeniably easier to use, doesn't get caught on things, et cetera. And that's why that is the product that trades at 10 times revenues as a pure play in the stock market and is taking a lot of market share. But it still requires a multi-day training class. It still has all these features. And once you fire that auto injector and you put that product on your arm, you are stuck with it for 3 days. You take it off, it's garbage, and you lose all the insulin inside too. And you have to track, and it doesn't work at all if you don't have that second cell phone with you. And it only holds 2 mL of insulin. So 25% of all type 1s and 65% of all type 2s can't get through 3 days on 2 mL. So they
Let me
can't
ask
use
you
the
this,
pump.
just to focus on the technology of what's been or lack of technology that's been available versus what you guys are trying to bring to market. From your perspective, your background, as I understood it, is more in the finance side, more in the investment management side. Like, this is all self-taught. Is this like how difficult was it for you to sort of like immerse yourself in the technology of it all? We've spoken about some of the challenges of running a med tech type of company. Like, talk to us about that for anybody that's thinking about, hey, yeah, med tech can't be that hard. Like, what type of process is that to self-educate on that?
Well, understanding that there was a need was pretty easy when you really dug in and got a hold of it. My initial reaction was, why do you think there's an opportunity for a small company in this space when there are $3 billion gorillas that are already there? There must be something you're missing here. And I don't think there is. I think that ultimately usability to serve a totally different, if you had a me too product and you tried to introduce it now, it would take 10 years and $500 million. And
Okay.
you might never get any real traction.
Okay.
So you have to be different, but I'm convinced that this product is different enough. So the positioning itself wasn't that hard. What's hard to understand is there's no human trial allowed in this category, because if the product malfunctions, an experimental pump malfunctions, and all 3 mL of insulin goes into the patient dies in a couple minutes. So the FDA will not allow a human trial. So you look at it and you say, what's so hard about this? And that's what's been really interesting, is immersing myself in the, okay, this is hard, but why? What's prevented people from introducing a product like this? And
Right.
one is the mindset, right? Like that you, this constant self-fulfilling feedback loop that the people who have the time to fill out the 100-page questionnaires every quarter about what their patients want in terms of the next feature in an insulin pump are the exact people who are already the best served by the current market.
Right.
Because they want features, they are tech savvy, they are well insured. And the people who work in the strip mall and see a patient every 10 minutes and are just trying to pay their bills and worry that their car's about to be stolen, those are the people, not to make too much light of it, like those are the people who probably our patients are going to see. That's
Right.
your mainline endocrinologist. And those and so how do you make a product that's easy to learn, that addresses their needs and addresses the needs of the patients that they see who want to learn something in 10 or 20 minutes that's going to make their lives substantially better. But the FDA process here, because even though there's no human trial, it is rigorous, because remember, 0.0% chance that you can fail open and that insulin can go into the product, go into the patient. Pumping insulin is a really nasty technical problem because it's delivered in extremely small quantities. We're talking smaller than a 200th of a drop.
Wow.
And you have to deliver it with about 5% accuracy. And you have to do it all in a form factor that people can wear at a cost point that's affordable. And you have to do it while not agitating the mixture too much, because the main preservative in insulin, which you buy separately and inject into the pump in all current forms of the pump, including ours, if you agitate an insulin-based mixture, it clumps like crazy. And
Wow.
most kinds of plastic leach into the other, have leaching problems with the other preservatives that are found in insulin. So you've got most materials and most kinds of pumping are off the table. And it might take you $10 or $20 million if you don't know what you're dealing with, to figure that out. And that's why this space is filled with the wrecked carcasses of companies that thought they had a good
I can
idea,
imagine. I
but
can
then
imagine.
only at the end realized they would never get the accuracy, or that they could never convince the FDA that they could deliver safely, or there's some massive biocompatibility problem. So you're working in all these different vectors of, it's got it. There's a drug that's injected separately. It's a very complex medical device that's operated by the patients, and you've got materials problems. You've got biocompatibility issues. There's a test that we struggled with for half a year called the insulin stability test, because, between the materials and the way you pump the insulin, et cetera, there's a bar you have to hit where you can't be damaging the molecule too much, because insulin sticks to everything. That's how it works. It sticks to your red blood cells and forces sugar in. Like there are, yeah, so there's a biological component to this. You've got to worry about the set itself. You've got to worry about what kind of testing you're doing.
Wow.
It's been exciting. It's exciting in that it's so involved. And you've got all these different vectors, right? You've got it. You cannot, I can't say this enough. In medicine today, if you have a product that doesn't make the patient's lives easier, doesn't save them money, doesn't make the doctor's lives easier, doesn't offer them the opportunity to make money, and offer the insurance company the opportunity to save money,
Right.
you're really going to struggle. It's going to be really hard.
You
So
need to
you
hit
have to hit on
all
all
those
five of
points.
those vectors at the same time. And that is in most cases. I mean, you're always going to find a corner case, but I think in general, for a broad-based use product like this, that's what you have to do.
But
You have
when you say broad-based, I mean is this not ultimately a worldwide opportunity, right? I
Oh
mean,
yeah. Yeah, no,
this
like the penetration of pumps outside of the United States is fractional. Like I think the highest penetrated pump country outside of the US is Germany, and that's like 12 or 13%. Like
Wow.
they of people who should be wearing a pump who are. Like it is, the single payer systems have generally not adopted the pumps because the current pumps are really expensive. And
Wow.
they
And
know there's a
it's funny
long-term
because
benefit, but they're not willing to pay the upfront freight.
I think that most people, when they think about, running a publicly traded company, in their mind, it's all just about, revenue, 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 and they don't understand all the intricacies that go into some of the things that you've just outlined. Let me ask you that. How do you balance the that dual role of being the CEO of a company that has to execute on all the avenues that you spoke of and wearing that other hat of running a publicly traded company? How do you balance that? What do you how do you find that?
Well, I think you have to ultimately, when you're a small cap company, capital is expensive.
Okay.
And I think that's, and it's so important to understand that, like, you have to be very focused. If you try and do 20 things instead of the one thing that's really important, you're going to do 20 things badly and not get anywhere. It's very easy to waste, and time is money, right? It's very easy to waste time, and it's very easy to lose focus. And I think, when I think about my role at the company, look, I'm not the inventor. I'm not the technical guy, but my job is to constantly focus us on what does this product need to be in order to be commercially successful, and as an asset. And that's an asset maybe in our hands, maybe in someone else's hands, maybe when we get cleared. There's a buyer waiting for us who says, look, you did the hard work, you got it clear. This is a product that I think is adjacent to my product and would be additive when in the hands of my sales force. I want it. We can't be afraid to, and at the end of the day, I make a dollar as the CEO. So I'm not incented to hang around here for the salary. Like this is, and we're also the largest shareholders. So we're incented to do whatever is best for the shareholders from a risk adjusted, on a risk adjusted best return basis.
Well,
And
I think that's an interesting comment that, very often people think that when they're running a company, they're very set in their ways and they're very set in their goal, and they're not open-minded to saying, hey, if it is in the best interest of our investors, shareholders, whatever the case is, to have somebody else take this to market, or to let their sales reps go knocking on doors. Not everybody is as open-minded as that, and I think that's a unique way to look at it. So that's interesting.
I think at the end of the day, you have to be loyal to shareholders and loyal to what doing what's best for the asset. And if we decide that what's and if and you have to weigh those things on a risk adjusted relative return, because honestly, getting a product through the FDA is hard. Launching a product is hard too. And even if we think we have all these advantages in terms of cost, ease of use, at targeting a different audience, targeting a different set of doctors, not needing to detail the individual patients and being able to detail the individual reps. One joke that I often resort to is no plan survives contact with reality, right? And so you have to be prepared for the unexpected, and you certainly have to be prepared that, one or the there's going to be a very binary outcome here if we get cleared. It's either going to be a sale at some point, early on in commercialization, or we're going to have to take it much, much farther. And I'm not afraid of that in terms of commercialization, because I do think we have a unique approach and a lot of unique advantages. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't evaluate that there's risk in commercializing anything. And like right now, all we've done is, this plane has fuel, which is capital, and then it's got wings, which is our R&D team, and we've got, we've got the and we've got our product, and that's
Now
it.
it's just now it's sit back, relax, and enjoy the flight.
Yeah, no,
Got everything.
this is answer the and get through the FDA process, and then you'll have done something that very few other companies have done. And to have done it with a product that looks as different from the others as ours does, I think that's of real value. And the fact is, this I have no fear of us launching this ourselves. None, because it is really differentiated and it does have some very unique characteristics. But at the same time, when I meet the reps for each of the big three and they see my product, they say, I ask them three questions. Well, two questions, and then I ask them, I solicit a third question. Question one, do you think there's a market for this? Invariably they say, yes, there's a market for this. Is this the same market as your product? Invariably they say, no, this is not the same market. This is a different adjacent market to my product. And then the third question is, well, would you ever want this in your bag? And whenever you ask them that, like, yeah, gosh, I wish I had this in my bag. Because they know there are two audiences that they're missing all the time, right? Audience one is the nurse diabetes educator who puts the three current pumps on the table, and the patient says, no. And they have different reasons for each one, right? Like they're like, I know people who've done that one and that one and that one. I tried this one once, I didn't like it. I was allergic to the cannula. There are a million different reasons why people say no, but they say no, but I'm still interested in a pump. What else do you have for me? And since 2011, what else do you have? The answer to what else do you have for me is, I have nothing else for you. Try harder, be smarter, work, be more tech savvy, be better. And that's not a very good answer. And so I think the NDEs would love to have that fourth product on the table for, why don't you try this then? Or you've been in here asking for months and months for a different alternative. Well, maybe this will work for you. Take this home, watch a 20-minute YouTube video, play with our cartridge, and then you might have something. And that solves a problem for them. It solves a problem for the patient. And even if the patient can't use it, at least they've tried. At least they feel like they've checked the box and they've tried to give them some other choice that they haven't been able to give them for a really long time, right? So, and then the other audience is, there are only 4,000 endos in the US who see patients, and 2,500 of them have never written a pump.
in
Interesting. 30 years. They haven't written a pump. So these reps know there are all these people in their territory who don't write. And they know that they can't get them with their current product. They know that they'll walk in the door and the end will be like, I'm not doing that because I know how much work that is. And you know,
Well,
the
Jeff,
average endocrinologist makes $115,000 a year gross. One of the worst paid specialties in the United States. They are not excited about, and because they're poorly paid, they tend to be older. They're not the most tech savvy people. They don't, they
Right.
all they get paid for are office visits and lab tests. So the last thing they want is a hard to use product to, you know, that waltzes in the door and results in them doing a lot of extra work. So they're pump reluctant when it comes to writing scripts. And I think the reps know that. And they know that if they had another product to show them, maybe they could get back in the door of these people who are in their territory. And I think
Well,
that's another really important dynamic to understand.
I think that you've set the stage, and I want to be cognizant of your time, but I think you've set the stage of like really just like anticipation of well, okay, what's gonna happen over the next couple of months? I mean, many times, you know, companies come on and they tell us, okay, well, we've done this, we've done this, we've done this, and you know, whether they come back and hear the update in 2 months, 6 months, or a year and a half, it's pretty much going to be the same status quo. But here you've nicely set the stage of what you've accomplished and you know what there is to come. And I hope you'll come back, whether it's in a couple months, and give us an update and share with us some of the success that you've had. And I appreciate you putting this on the table for those that could benefit from it, whether from a medical standpoint, whether from an investment standpoint. It's an exciting story. You're extremely enthusiastic about it, and I think anybody that listens to it is going to get excited just through you. So thank you for sharing it.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, in a couple of months, we might or might not be able to talk about where we are with the FDA. I'll just tell you, we did submit on January 19th, and we've disclosed publicly that they did give us their first set of questions on March 15th, which means we have until September 15th to answer them, or we're going back to go. So we're diligently working to prepare our answers to those questions, and
All right.
we'll update
Well,
the
we
market
wish
as
you luck
appropriate.
and looking forward. Thanks again,
Thank you.
Jeff.
All
Good
right.
talking to you.
Appreciate it, Seth.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.